Life is a workout, and Smoothie King is here to help you power through. Whether you're crushing morning miles or sprinting through back-to-back meetings, give your body the energy, protein, and power it needs to help you conquer your goals. Only at Smoothie King.
Barbara Corcoran's book, which is called If You Don't Have Big Breasts, Put Ribbons on Your Pigtails and Other Lessons I Learned from My Mom. We just don't see those kind of titles anymore.
Welcome back to That's a Gay Ass Podcast, the podcast that asks, whose fault is it that you're gay? It is me, Eric Williams, and this week we've got Stephen Phillips Horst on the podcast, one of the hosts of the unbelievable Celebrity Book Club podcast. And God, this timing of this recording is serendipitous. But I do want to acknowledge any witch out there that is giving me bad flight luck. Heard you loud and clear, girlina. My flight to St. Louis from LA was right before boarding, delayed 5 hours, and it would have arrived at 4 a.m. So whatever twink I pissed off, please just ease up. I get it. I'm flying again soon. And just please, everybody, squeeze your crystals for me. But let's get into this week's episode with Stephen from Celebrity Book Club Podcast. You've seen that podcast featured in Rolling Stone, the New York Times, Times of London, if you're nasty. He's also written for Interview Magazine, New York Mag. So this is a very exciting ep for me personally, and I hope you love it. I do want to really quickly tell you that the live show preparation is going swimmingly well, and the ticket link for LA is going to be up in mere days. And then New Yorkers, just say there are things happening, so stay tuned for that. I love you so much. Leave a 5-star review if you have not yet. It really makes a difference, and enjoy this ep. Stephen Phillips, goddamn Horst, thank you for coming on this gay ass podcast. I feel like we have a celebrity himself on the pod today.
Oh my God, that is so generous of you. Thank you so much. Yes, I do identify as famous, so I appreciate that.
And your pronouns are, what's the Republican joke? My pronouns are...
My pronouns are really/famous. Yeah. EGOT. Oh my God, no, I could only dream of achieving an EGOT like Jennifer Hudson, who totally has a legitimate EGOT.
Yeah, I want to be just like the most successful EGOT there is, Jennifer Hudson.
I want to tell you that I've been a fan of yours for a long time, but I want to be vulnerable and tell you why I first became a fan. Is that okay to do so?
Mm-hmm.
Safe space.
I'm terrified.
Fell into your trap.
Was it like okay, no, go on.
You were about to interrupt me and I was about to say it.
Say it.
It was a bulge pic. It was fully bulge pics on the internet from you and Eric. And once I followed from the bulge, I realized I fell in love with the bulge, but it was the mind that kept me following. And I want to congratulate you on a gorgeous mind and, for all intents and purposes, a stunning bulge.
Thank you so much. That was the intention. That's really what I've been trying to go for my whole career. You know, you set the honey trap, but then they stick around for the hot takes, the scintillating discussion.
Is that what you call your bulge, a honey trap?
It's a yes, it's bathed in honey. Bears love it. No, but I really appreciate that. You know, I've always said I want to be hot for a smart second, but obviously I think concealed within that is this desire to be seen as the intellectual, right?
A person, really.
And I think it's so much harder, especially in today's culture, to express the desire openly, because it's so chic and almost, you know, nihilistic, apathetic to say, I just want to be hot. Sorry, hot girls to the front. You know what I mean? And so everyone, I think, falls into that trope quite easily.
Do you think it's possible to be respected for your mind and your bulge equally?
I mean, nothing is equal. There is no such thing as equal.
That's true. A
quantity of anything, or quality of anything.
Equality or quality. Well, what is gorgeously high quality is your godforsaken Celebrity Book Club podcast. I cannot believe it took me as long as it did to start listening, because you and Lily, there's a reason why you've bopped to the top. It is so good, and I want to give a little bit of a preview for what we will talk about later, because I can't talk about it right now because I need to ease in for my own sanity. But this week's episode, you go over the book of one Whoopi Goldberg, who is, dare I say, my patron saint. And so it's kind of happenstance that we're recording the week that that episode came out, and I want to thank you for your service.
Freud said there are no coincidences.
And Freud was right. I mean, I truly want to fuck my mom. Is that what he said? I'm kidding. Yep. And I don't want to.
He also never said the coincidences thing, but.
Well, we're zero. There's nothing's equal, nothing's quality. You did importantly dive into Andy Cohen's book in a recent episode, which of course I devoured. What I love about this episode is that you went into it thinking that he was a bit of an evil queen, and you walked out of it thinking that he was less Machiavellian. Do you feel Andy Cohen today is someone you could share a drink with and enjoy that experience?
I think I would. I imagine he would be extremely on, and I don't know, just mean like fake. I just mean like, you know, amped. And I think that it might be hard to kind of relax and flirt and sort of draw him out a little bit. You know, I like to be a little coy. I like to be wry.
Sure.
I like to challenge. And I could see him maybe losing interest in that rather quickly.
Are you in like a dating scenario? Do you like to be chased more? Or do you like to be the chaser?
Well, he's asking me if I'm a chaser.
Are you a chaser?
Of course I like to be chased. Who doesn't like to be chased? It's the dream of every woman since time immemorial. We all want to be
But
chased.
Then who's, and I agree with this, but also then like, who's
Someone
doing the
chase.
Chasing? Because I think when I met Matt, we strictly fell into he was being chased and I was the chaser. But I do...
Is that your boyfriend? Not to pry.
It's my goddamn husband, if you can believe it.
Whoa. Okay. Sorry. I didn't realize we just entered a Catholic church.
Yeah,
oh, and there's the wedding ring. You just waved it on camera. Okay.
Sorry. I didn't mean to, you know, bring up anything.
Yeah.
That would,
yeah. Clearly you've done this before.
I wish that was my go-to every time I say I'm married and I just wave with the left hand. No, I very much was the chaser. And I don't know. I think I like to be chased so in many ways in my life, not just in a relation. So dare I ask, what's your current romantic status?
Okay. I do want to get back to Andy Cohen, but I will say I am of boyfriend experience, and my boyfriend... I would say pursued me. I mean, we were long distance. We were in different states, but he would send me like packages in the mail with like little notes in them. And
okay,
like,
so I'm Catholic Church and you were Amish girl.
Yeah. And that was like thrilling and exciting. And I really was wooed by that quite heavily. But I do think that in the chasee, also, my boyfriend's name is Chase, which is interesting.
Whoa, no coincidences, said Freud.
Yeah, exactly. I feel that there is a way to... I think that coyness is like setting a trap for someone to walk into, but then you can be playful, right? So it's like, I want someone to come to me initially, sure. But I think that, you know, once you're biting your lip, it's like all of a sudden... You get to have, I guess, because to me, I guess it's about the back and forth, right? It's about the repartee. And I think there's always going to be a little bit of give and a little bit of take. And, you know, I'm going to push the envelope a little bit, but then I'm going to open my own little envelope. I'm going to see what you do with it. And so, you know, I want everyone to always be kind of like questioning their role and questioning.
Who's sending the envelope? Who's opening the envelope? Who is pushing the envelope? Who is folding
because
the envelope?
That's where the tension comes from. And tension is erotic. And ultimately, it's like, you know, once the mystery's gone, the intrigue is gone, then you don't want to follow the path anymore.
I do want to agree with that. And I want to omit that I said that I was the chaser, period. I do think that I was the original chaser in this scenario. And then Matt did a beautiful job of surprising me with that tension, because he would out of the blue come up with an idea or be the one to text first. So I do think there is that chasing dance that makes it so erotic. I mean, the great example is that the second date we had, I said, to be completely controversial and thinking it was going to be a total no, I said, hey, if you want to come home with me, you can. Zero pressure. And he went, yeah. And then slept over, the fucking slut. So I did not think that that was going to happen. But he chased the bet, if you will.
But he chased the question. You know what I mean?
Yeah, yeah, yeah. He chased the question.
That's what he was chasing. We have a... So in French, one of my favorite languages, we have a phrase. And it's, fuis-moi, je te suis. Suis-moi, je te fuis. And it means, flee me, and I follow you. Follow me, and I flee. Right, and it's that idea that we always want what we can't have, right? So if you're running after someone, they're going to be running from you. But I think implicit in that is a desire to be running from somebody, right? Yes. And so part of that is always, there's always this give and take, and there's always this push pull. And I think behind every coy gesture and every I'm not interested, you know, there is this kernel because the dynamic is there in the first place. And so it's just about sort of teasing that out. And I think that is what's so enjoyable about romantic connection.
And I do think the French know it best, although I want to give some evidence that I've never myself slept with a French person, unfortunately. But while studying abroad, my friend did get railed by a French man. And I'm not going to say that all French men were like Paul, but then there was a bit of a jackhammer and it did not feel as good as she wanted.
Sure. Well, it sounds like your data set needs to expand a little bit because we're looking at a data set of one right now.
You know, I don't know if I agree. I think that Paul kind of...
We can draw conclusions about the nation based on this.
I think I've got enough. Have you ever fucked a Frenchman?
Oh, many, yeah. Mm. Well, I've spent a considerable amount of time in France. Other than America, I'd probably put France as number two out of countries that I've lived
America
in.
America first.
America first for sure, but then we go to France for where I've spent days, weeks, even months at a time.
Even months. Well, then let's go back to Andy Cohen because that was the premier sujet pour this episode.
Famously not French. I think Andy... So here's something about Andy. So what you were saying, you were speaking to the point that I made in my own podcast, which is that he's actually not that Machiavellian. Yeah. He is not this sort of grand puppet master of all these poor women, and he's not this, like, you know, this sort of, like, grand wizard misogynist. Mm-hmm. He's just interested in telling stories, and he really sees these women as his peers and his colleagues. And I think one thing that really spoke to that was, I will reveal a secret now on your pod, which is that...
Please.
Somebody who listens to our pod is friends with Andy Cohen, and they encouraged him to listen to the episode, and he responded to that person being like, oh, I saw that they wrote about me on Twitter. Like, I don't think that they liked me, and I don't want to listen to the episode. And he was very dismissive, and he was kind of, and like, he had just sort of seen a tweet in passing and was just like, you know what? No. And I'm sure he didn't listen to the episode. I'm sure, like, and this person was like, oh, no, they're really funny. They loved it. Like, they're really interested in it. And he was kind of like, huh. I'm sure he kind of, like, saw that message, moved on, forgot about it. And that's the kind of thing that makes me love Andy, but also I think is why the drink between me and him might not really connect. Because I think he's just kind of, like, on to the next thing. And so, like, he's not so intrigued by that cat and mouse game that I'm maybe trying to play here, where it's like, I'm cleverly implying that maybe I'm gonna rib him a little bit, but I'm also interested in, like, teasing out these other ideas about his personality and his role within the culture. And he's kind of just like, I don't know, I think they didn't like me, like, I don't care, bye.
He's like the cat that's just like kind of like going to another bowl of milk. I do think that that's probably one of his defense mechanisms, is to like stay Andy Cohen that he is, which is like follow his bliss and be in control of his narrative so much. He doesn't want to even like tempt fate to listen to an episode that doesn't just say
exactly
glowing things.
Right.
Which does, you know what? And I give him respect too, because like, I think I'm too emotionally, God, I don't know what the word is, but like, if I were to know that someone's husband of a show that I executive produced killed themselves, it would be very hard for me to like bring them onto the wife onto the reunion and be like, so, Taylor, looks like, and then just like make the next beat of the reunion about your husband's suicide. That to me, like, he clearly has this
The ability to compartmentalize.
Is
quite impressive. And of course, you know, when you describe it like that, you would come up with your first reaction would be what my anticipation was going into reading his book, which is that he's evil, right? To do that, there has to be this level of evilness there. But I think it's actually, he's just has such a like sense of presence, and he's actually so in the moment.
Yeah.
That he's kind of just like, yeah, that happened. And, you know, he's not going to like blame himself forever over that husband's suicide.
And I want to say that some of the kookiest people I know in like beautiful and unhinged ways are the most present people I know. They just have no choice but to see what is in front of them and maximize it and then live fully in that, which might be kind of cuckoo to others because it's like, well, don't you know the context a little bit?
And does that sense of presence, does it also come along with kind of a guiltlessness?
Yes. I think that is probably a sign of a high creative level if you can do that, because you're just like an unhingedness. Yes.
It's definitely a high creative level because your brain is just moving towards production and iteration and
sure.
getting on to the next thing versus sort of wallowing in more of the guilt, which has a narcissism to it as well, right? To just be sitting there thinking about like, what is this thing that I did and how does it, you know, what kind of person am I? Am
100%.
Am I, you know, do I seem if that is like what's happening, you know?
I think that if you like wallow more in that thinking.
Then again, not that Andy Cohen is not a narcissist, because that would be ridiculous to suggest.
Well, you can be both. You can be super present and the narcissist word.
the N word. The other N word. Narcissism. The other one.
Well, listen, I do, speaking of keeping things progressing and moving, I do need to ask you, Stephen, the famous gayest podcast question, which is, whose fault is it that you're gay? Who do we blame, babe?
Okay, so my first instinct to answer this is my nanny, Heather, who was really into dragons, claimed to be friends with Marilyn Manson, took me to see Blue Man Group, and had a floor-to-ceiling poster of Tori Amos.
And this was Heather, you said?
Yeah.
Wow, Heather, an enigma wrapped in a riddle, and like, Manson.
And here's the thing. It's like, I was definitely gay at that time. Obviously, like, it's mostly nature with a little bit of nurture. And then at the end of the day, it's a choice. And I do believe that it's a combination of all those things. And every day I wake up and I do choose homosexuality. But
if I do it again.
But if I hadn't been gay at that point, there's no way I could have come out of that, you know, 2 years of her as my nanny without being gay.
How old were you when Heather was in your orbit?
Like I want to say like 9 to 11, maybe.
Yeah,
10 to 11, like that area.
Very impressionable age, especially because of the
Tori Amos. It's like last exit before Brooklyn or whatever. I think that's a phrase, right? That's a book, maybe. It's like the last chance before the sexuality is really cemented. It's kind of like, if they're not going to be gay yet, you got to get it in right now. And she was just like, Tori Amos, like, we would watch Days of Our Lives together. I would fake having a stomach ache once a week so I could leave school at noon. She would pick me up and we'd order.
To be with Heather.
Yeah, to be with Heather, and we watched. So I could at least get one episode a week, which for, you know, a soap opera is kind of all you need.
It's all you need. And there's something so comforting about the name Heather. What I envision, and please don't tell me if I'm wrong, what I envision is Heather has dirty blonde hair that goes down to her shoulders. He's rolling, looking around. She would wear like a light purple shirt, but her jeans kind of like had a bagginess to them. And she always had a ring of keys that were really jangly.
Okay, the jangly keys is extremely accurate. I mean, to me, there's nothing more babysitter than jangly keys. And like 90s babysitter, it's jingle fucking jangle over there. She was more like alt, like as you are getting from the whole like dragons and Marilyn Manson. And like, she was more like bottle blonde, like proxy blonde, like long hair straight. She was a big girl. She was like very kind of alt mall, like pale red lips.
Oh, I love her.
She had a lipstick tattoo of her own mouth on her like décolletage, like right here.
I wonder what she was doing with that emotionally. Like, is it like,
Well, you want to know what
person? Yeah, tell me.
Do you want to know what she was doing with it emotionally? She was a she lived in our house on the, and I later found out, like years after she was our nanny, that my brother revealed to me that she had actually been running one of the very first solo porn sites out of her bedroom.
You're kidding?
Yeah.
Wait, out of in your house?
Yeah. Isn't that iconic?
That is okay. Heather continues to amaze years after. So she, I mean, you know what she's giving? She's giving from Euphoria, the girl that does the campsite.
Yes, absolutely. Yes,
I love that for her. And you only found out about this years later, right? You didn't know about this like close to.
No, I didn't. I found out she had a website. I believe it was Wild Child. Both of those words spelled with a Y.
She was alt.
Because at the time, like, I was like, I knew she had her Kama Sutra books and she had her digital camera. And I was always like, Heather, like, what are you doing with your digital camera?
Do we think Heather was queer?
I mean, by today's definition, she is, like, extremely queer. Because just to be, like, even remotely mall or alt or, like, be a cam girl is to be queer. But I feel like, you know, if she only had boyfriends, as far as I know.
God, I do love that idea of the jingle fucking jangle babysitter who, because the thing is, I growing up didn't necessarily have a Heather that was deeply kind in that way that stuck around long enough. We did have someone that babysat and then stole my parents' credit cards, so she kind of got
okay,
the boot.
Okay, canonically queer. Go off.
Winona, bitch. Yeah. But
mother,
come on, mama. yeah, we always get the best stuff from Macy's. But I will say that I had a babysitter when I was young, named Liz, who was this older black woman that was like a true angel. And one of my queerest early memories was visiting her at her house and seeing her wigs everywhere. And you better believe I put on Liz's wigs.
Oh, wow, that's so beautiful.
I do think she had cancer, and that's partly why she was really... she probably had wigs before, but also she was so kind to let this, you know, 10-year-old gay boy take her wigs and parade around her carpet home.
That's so beautiful. The permission, right? What we talk about when we talk about permission.
What we talk about. Can we make a moment for just in appreciation for all of the female babysitters who made us who we are?
I'm now recalling again as we do this moment. One of my earlier nannies, one of the first jinglers to ever jangle, Nora, who I'm actually still friends with. She's retained a relationship with our family forever. And I was 5, and I would pretend to be a female figure skater. And I would ask her to announce me as I like entered onto the kitchen floor. And then I would like slide across the hardwood floors and Nora. I would be like, okay, like announce me as Veronica.
Talk about permission.
Yeah. Which is like kind of one of the sexiest names you can think of when you're 5.
By the way, Stephen, all of these names in your lives are inspired. Nora, Heather, announced me as Victoria. I had a neighbor who, she did ultimately also make me queer because she had a baby at 16. And before she gave birth, she would come over and I would force her to listen to me scream about Pippi Longstocking's theme song.
Pippi Longstocking's coming into your world.
Was that? I'm not familiar with that. Was that like a cartoon on like ABC Family?
I think it was a book and a cartoon, and it had a theme song. And I remember forcing her to pretend that we were in a storm and be incredibly dramatic while we were on the boat. And of course, I think I played Pippi.
Would she like, you know, rattle the shutters or whatever? Do all
she would riddle, rattle, and rustle, bitch. I mean, yeah, it was. And she, I wish I, unfortunately, I think her name was Liz. Which is a little less inspired than Nora, but yeah, we do what we can.
Yeah, Liz is not necessarily like activating that like fabulous diva worship gene.
I know. But the teenage pregnancy does activate more than her name, I would say.
Oh, for sure.
I think I knew inherently, finding out that she was having a kid at that age, that it was sort of alternative and not in the mainstream. And I probably felt some sort of kindredness with her, just knowing that I was not allowed to be what I was.
She was like, you know, she was a witch. She had the Scarlet Letter, and you were like, bitch, me too. Like, you
bitch,
know?
Me too. Which, by the way, it's no surprise that we're all obsessed with witches. I mean, when I got to go to Salem for the first time, the first of one time, but I will be back, I could not feel, I was so excited to not only, of course, see the Hocus Pocus on location, sites of filming, but like, I've becoming kind of a witchy crystal girl.
Mm. Yeah, you know, it's funny. The commercialization of Salem and witch culture is super problematic because obviously the history is super dark. And being from Massachusetts, we like to read The Crucible, which also I'm sure you read if you're not from Massachusetts.
What if I was like, no, I'm not familiar.
Yeah, but I remember thinking it was like, wow, damn, this is some real woman-on-woman crime here. Like, these teen girls are just fucking pointing fingers left and right.
Truly. But I do find that, I know you're being a little silly about the commercialization, but did you see that clip recently of, take two. It's not even a clip. It's, I was going to talk about how, like, tarot and crystals, it's becoming such, like, a TikTok.
Yeah, I almost think at the saturation so far, it's maybe, like, it peaked, maybe.
Oh, maybe. Well, the reason I bring it up is because, and speaking of Andy Cohen, I was watching Vanderpump Rules recently because it's in my contract with God, and James Kennedy's new girlfriend has become, or says that she's a huge tarot girl, and she wants to, like, be a professional tarot reader for her life. And I, do you read into the cards as they're pulled?
I mean, I think everyone enjoys having someone talk to you about yourself. To that extent, I love tarot. I'm a huge ASMR fan. I love watching ASMR videos. Like, tarot accomplishes that same thing. You're sitting there and someone's just like, wow, okay, interesting. So you're the kind of person who really thinks about decisions sometimes, but sometimes you don't. And you're like, oh my God, that's me. How did you know that?
I do love just like, that. I do love any blanket statement. I recently went to the acupuncturist, and he put his three fingers on the side of my wrist, and he goes, you're really impatient, aren't you? And even though it was an insult, I loved hearing it, because I was like, you're right, and read me, bitch.
Yeah, and I think that you love the idea that your personality is so interesting that it's that visible to someone, right? That it comes through. So obviously, like, when you're like, wow, you're right, I am special. I'm probably more impatient than the average duck, and you can just read it from my wrist alone, my delicate yet masculine little wrist.
I know, he just continues to say, like, negative traits about me, and I'm just, like, obsessed with, yeah, I am the most rude person you've ever met.
Right. Well, because, you know, what's our greatest fear, right? That we don't matter.
And well, so it's the whole thing about, like, if you die on a plane crash, and there's a celebrity on that plane, and the headlines don't include you.
Oh my God. You know, the way that I think about this, every single time the plane is taking off, I'm running through the obit in my mind. And I'm just like, I'm like, up and coming comedian among victims on flight 306. And I'm like, is that story hitting like 2 days after the plane crash story, a week after, and it's a separate story? Or is it just like not even hitting and it's very page C10?
You're writing the obit, and you're also planning the reception and the timing of it. I love your mind.
Yeah, it's a disease. It's made flying a little difficult for me in recent years.
Well, by the way, like, clearly you're doing something right, because Celebrity Book Club has gotten coverage in The Gray Lady, in The Rolling Stone, in Boston Globe, if you're nasty. I love the takeover. Is there a secret that you tell the girls? Do you have friends that are like, okay, Stephen, how do I get into literally pinknews.com?
You know, press is an interesting beast, and I will say there's no easy road, but you have to be incredibly attractive and talented, so start there.
Well, sure. And the bulge, of course, was the entree.
But I think that people assume that press is easy, or that it just comes because you're, you know, if something is popular, then you're going to get press, or if it's, but the reality is there actually is a very specific alchemy to it. And I think it involves cultivating relationships with members of the media over years at a time. Mm. And, you know, sorry to burst the bubble and peel the curtain back, but that's the reality. I am very active on Twitter. I'm also kind of like, you know, I'm a writer. I've had a column on many websites. I've been pitching, cold pitching reporters about myself for years. And so then when you get to the point where you've been following someone on Twitter for a long time and they've been following you, you know, all of a sudden these relationships feel less foreign. And when they hear your name, maybe they're more likely to be interested in what you're doing. Or when someone else, you know, which, you know, pitches you to them, which is even better, then they're like, oh, yeah, I know that guy. I like him. I follow him on Twitter. You know, he follows me back. There's a goodwill that's been engendered there. And because you've been doing the work.
True. I also want to say that what I've realized is how relationshipy every single thing, professional and otherwise, is. Like, if you, I think, and that's partly why I have enjoyed doing this podcast, is like, if you prove to be a genuine person that is not just a climber and connect in a real way, then it actually, like, that does a lot of the work for you versus what I think we're, a lot of us are told, like, if you want to get, just like you say with like Andy Cohen with all the girls, are like, I'm a woman in business. Like, I feel like if you come forward just saying, I'm a business person and what can I get from you, it's icky dicky.
Yeah. And, you know, very early on in my career when I was like, I had a web series, or I would like do, you know, some other little thing that I was trying to get press for. Yeah, there would be a little bit more of that, like, you know, trying to get something out of people without necessarily having a relationship to back it up. And it's less successful, but sometimes sometimes you get somewhere, sometimes you don't. But even then, you still got to know what you're doing. And so, you know, if you want press, then like, you need to start reading press, honey. Okay.
Honey.
You need to pick up the newspaper.
Honey.
You need to know, and you need to have some writers that you like, and you know, you have to have some work that you're engaging with before you just want to jump into the pool.
Damn, good advice from Steven. And you know what? I would be remiss if we, speaking of advice, did not get into Whoopi Goldberg's 2011 book, just because it's so deeply personal to me. Her book is, that you cover in the podcast, If Someone Says You Complete Me, Run! Whoopi's Big Book of Relationships. God, this episode was so good. And I'm going to give away that at the end of every episode of this podcast, I do ask about Whoopi Goldberg. So this is partly why this is so big.
Oh,
to
my
me.
God. Wow.
And Sister
really
Act 2.
Really serendipitous.
Yeah, it's very serendipitous. And Sister Act 2 is what I actually credit as making me gay. So it was a shock when I found out that Whoopi talks so much about loving the smell of her own farts. Really went behind the curtain there. You also even say that she could veer towards scatological.
Mm. Well, just because of the sheer number of mentions of farting and personal smells and gas that happens in this book, where it's like, you say it once and you're kind of like, oh yeah, that's like a joke that any stand-up would make. Just like, you know, when you've been in a relationship for 3 years and then you just don't even try to hide the farts anymore. It's kind of like, yeah, that's a kind of a normal hacky joke. But by the ninth mention of farting in this kind of slim book, I was a little bit like, Whoopi, something's going on here.
Well, it's also that I love that you keep on talking about how often it seems that she is maybe asexual.
I think we've all always thought that about Whoopi. Her sexuality is a bit of a, you know, it's a box. It's a lock box. It's what, what's in there. And like, she's
Pandora
had all these,
will not be opened.
She's had all these relationships and marriages, but none of them have worked out. So what's going on there? And, you know, I think like, especially because, you know, when you're super famous, it's the 90s, it's like, yeah, you get married to some other guy or whatever. So it's kind of like, I don't know if it totally explains. Oh, I don't think that just means that she's so horny. But then she is always talking about getting fucked in the book and how you want to climb on someone. And she has all these hit and runs, which is how she refers to one night stands. So I find it still very curious, because I think visually and aesthetically, she presents as a mostly butch lesbian and has for some time.
Which I think is partly what was a thing that I felt so, like, I loved about her so much. And then when I found out that she had been married to men, it did ping, if you will. It did kind of, oh, that's okay, that's a fact. But I mean, the fact that she's, you know, been married 3 times, and then, of course, her famous quote about she doesn't want a stranger in my house, we love. But then the fact that she says that she's attracted to minions, she's continually keeping us guessing.
Yeah, and I think, like, you know, you look at somebody like Queen Latifah, for example, who, like, I guess is kind of, like, out now in this way.
Yeah.
But, yeah. like, yeah. For years, she never was, like, marrying men. You know what I mean?
Right.
And that's why you're like, okay, you're just a closeted lesbian. But with Whoopi, it's like all the men marrying while still coming off as such a lesbian. You're like, maybe the equation, the sort of on the other equal sign is asexual. You know, like there's just something kind of mismatched about it. And the book is very nonspecific. It's like there's just something where she's just like, I just don't like being in relationships. I don't like having someone around. And you're like, uh-huh.
Well, it's kind of like when you're closeted and you just try to keep things general, or like you try not to say anything too specific about the girl you're pretending you have a crush on.
Right.
It's just like, if I may reference the queer film 40-Year-Old Virgin, where he describes
canonic
breasts.
Queer film.
Not a queer film, where he describes the breasts, even though he's never actually, you know, felt them. He's like, yeah, they're like sandbags. Like, it's giving Whoopi Goldberg talking about fucking is giving.
It is a little 40-Year-Old Virgin. Yeah.
It's a little 40-Year-Old Virgin.
She's kind of giving that. I will also say, so her book is called If Someone Says You Complete Me, Run, Whoopi's Big Book of Relationships. There was like an era in memoir writing where you could have a really long title, and that's definitely behind us. Now it's all about like just
the
one word title. But it just made me think of Barbara Corcoran's book, which is called If You Don't Have Big Breasts, Put Ribbons on Your Pigtails and Other Lessons I Learned from My Mom. We just don't see those kind of titles anymore.
Wait, can you please help me unpack? Can you say the title again?
If You Don't Have Big Breasts, Put Ribbons on Your Pigtails, : and Other Lessons I Learned from My Mom.
So are we saying that the ribbons are distracting from the small breast, and so you're still making a big impact?
And not so much distracting from the small breasts, but attracting attention. Where a lack of breast would maybe cause someone, the eye to pass by, if you will.
Sure.
The gaze to not penetrate.
Attached to the pigtails are those like spinny, like things where you blow with air. I hope Barbara's mother really told her to make a big statement with her pigtails.
Now I'm picturing like Panto, like that sort of British drag that they did on that one season of UK Drag Race, where it's like so crazy. I mean, it was also existed before UK Drag Race, but
no, I think they started it.
You know, where it's just like this really extreme, like crazy doll kind of drag, where you got like glitter rouge and like you look like an old crazy lady, but as a baby.
Well, Barbara Corcoran, I love to see her journey with being plugged into the current era of social media, like her TikTok videos. Oh my god.
It's so there's something really uncanny about it.
There is. And I also, it kind of brings us to Bethany Frankel's TikTok, which is like everything drips with a plea for help.
I mean, she's the most stressful person to sort of like experience in any capacity. I can't imagine what it must be like to be around her in person.
And unfortunately, I was like really Team Bethany when it was like the golden age of Real Housewives of New York, but how far?
I mean, I identify with her. I can be quite anxious and controlling. So I do see myself as a Bethany. And I think I also love her I think she's really capable as a narrator of the show, and she's really good at like driving the plot and, you know, helping the viewer understand what's going on and having quips and being funny and kind of rolling her eyes at like everyone else being ridiculous on the show. I think she's great in that role.
Yeah.
As sort of the like caffeinated voice of reason.
Exactly. Which I think is why I sometimes get angry at people's criticism of Kyle Richards on Beverly Hills, because I actually think that she can be the audience surrogate, even though she, you know, I don't even know why people criticize. I mean, like, yeah, she sometimes stays outside of the drama, but whatever.
I will come out as someone who's only watched like 3 episodes of Rehoboth, so I don't know
Rehoboth
Kyle's role very
I appreciate this honesty, but I do know that we have to, speaking of powerful women, ask the next podcast question, which is, my dear friend Steven, if the world was ending, you could only save one character actress, who would you save?
Well, now when you say character actress,
you are an anxious, heady queen. It is a woman. It is a woman who has donned a single chapeau or a single accent, or is just a woman who has been in films that you love. I'm really loosey-goosey when it comes to the character actress moniker.
But, like, for example, Nicole Kidman is just straight up not a character actress.
But she has been argued as such, and I think that she is because of Nine Perfect Strangers. That Russian accent with the blonde wig put her into that category. That's my personal take. But listen, if you want to go with someone else, you know I support. This is a very gay safe space.
Wow. Okay. So things that are coming to my mind are just like some of my favorite actresses. Because
let's dive in.
I love Jennifer Garner, even though I'm going to quote a friend of mine who said, I think that she went into character in Catch and Release and never came out. And I think that she has been this like weird Christian mom for the past 12 years and like is and can't not be Christian mom in every single role that she's been in. But I love her in Alias so much, and I'm always rewatching that show for the 11th time. And I think that she's so brilliant.
This is a really controversial answer because she is, and I want to say that this still is a safe space, but she really has, I think, divined into the Christian mom character. I mean, Love, Simon, there was something about the coming out scene that made her do no wrong in my book. Is that okay to say?
Yeah, I remember loving that scene also in the movie. That movie was so bad, and it was like such an ad for itself. But like,
it was, that scene was like so well. Like, it clearly played to all of us girls who, if we had written our coming out scenes, it probably would have been.
I don't remember. I'm guessing she was accepting of the son. Is that
she actually called him a faggot? No, she actually was very accepting and like I don't even remember, but it's also similar to Olivia Colman in Heartbreakers. It didn't go as far as the Jennifer Garner coming out scene, but it got the job done.
That reference is going right over my head, but I love Olivia Colman in the whatever that movie is where she's the queen. What's it called? The Chosen? The
That's Chaim Potok's book. I'm kidding. I don't know what
the one where she's fucking Emma Stone and it's in the past.
I'm so bad with the queen stuff, and it's really devastating for me to admit that.
Okay. I also love Carrie Russell. I think it's a crime she never got an Emmy for The Americans. One of the greatest crimes perpetrated against both America and women in general.
I think that the Oscar should have gone to her for Waitress.
Oh, I never saw Waitress, but I agree.
Oh, Steven. I would one day love to bake a pie and watch Waitress. Because, by the way, it, of course, became a very gay Broadway musical. But right. The movie is the movie is like, of course, also has a crazy storied history with the, you know,
the girl getting murdered. Yeah.
Yeah. Like the star slash director or writer getting murdered. Like, I love true crime, but that to me is too close to home because I watched Waitress in a friend of mine's home at the time that was a very sort of rife place full of danger because she had a really straight dad and brother, but also she introduced me to Waitress. So I felt a very big push pull there, but the chocolate chip cookies were good, you know? Anywho, I do think Carrie Russell is all of these answers are really speaking to me, and I want to thank you for that.
Okay, and then I'll also just say quickly that, like, I'm kind of, like, I think I was trying to be a little bit too conceptual when you first said that, but I will say, like, my hands-on favorite actresses are Cameron Diaz and Kate Hudson, and, like, they're the queens of all queens. Like, they invented, like, having fun, in my opinion. And The Sweetest Thing is one of my favorite movies of all time.
Oh, my God, I love that movie so much.
And their joy and lust for life and ability to say fuck you to anyone who thinks that like enjoying a rom-com is ironic, quote unquote, you know, they are so and then of course they're very talented and they give these like layered vulnerable performances and they've done drama.
They have. And I was nervous to see Kate Hudson in the Glass Onion film, knowing how upset Kaylee Cuoco was about losing out on the role. But then Kate Hudson fucking killed it.
I didn't see Glass Onion, but I'm sure she did kill it. What you need to see with Kate Hudson is a movie where she plays a New Orleans-based ad exec who gets colon cancer, and she falls in love with her doctor, who's played by Gael Garcia Bernal.
Ooh, yeah.
It's really random. You will sob. You will cry. It's beautiful. No one's seen it.
What's the name of it?
I couldn't tell you.
Why would you? I thought you were describing the Kate Hudson New Orleans movie where she was the at-home nurse, The Skeleton Key.
Oh, that's like a horror film.
And it's one of the only horror films that I can say with full confidence I would watch over and over.
You know what I will say is a Kate Hudson movie that doesn't succeed is Le Divorce. With her and Naomi Watts, where it's like the casting's just, those are two women who should actually never be in the same movie, where it's like, as much as I love Kate Hudson and she can do drama, like Naomi Watts is just too on another, like always trying to get the Oscar planet, and it's like,
yeah,
they're not in the same play, and they're sisters. It makes no sense.
Oh no. Well, I will say I'm really proud of you for making a stance about your very funny and amazing co-host Lily, who said that Cameron Diaz was in the movie Hitch this most recent week.
You know what?
Podcast.
Yeah, and she made this whole big apology on social media for it, and I'm glad that she did. But when that happened in our recording session, just to pack the curtain for a second, like I was shocked because I was like, I don't remember seeing Cameron Diaz in Hitch, but it's been so long, like maybe she was, sure. And she kind of just like steamrolled through it. with all this confidence, so I wasn't gonna like stop and you know try and like take the show down to like fact check this one thing. And at the end of the show, our producer comes over the headphones and she was like, so I just wanted to point out that actually was Amber Valletta in Hitch. And then she was like, so do you guys want me to take out that whole segment, or like really kind of like, because she just started working with us, and it was like thinking like we're such like journalists that we would never want that to be out there. And I was like, oh no, this is staying in, and Lily's going to make a big apology for it on social media.
Oh, see, you are a press king. God, you're good.
Well, you know, I knew it would get engagement, so.
Listen, engagement, boyfriend, husband, or otherwise, we love a good engagement. God, this is all so fucking good, and I'm glad you peeled back that curtain, which unfortunately does lead me to the final question of this podcast, which I know it's very coincidental that the Whoopi Goldberg episode came out, because the question is, Stephen, what is the best Whoopi Goldberg film?
Well, I mean, the thing coming to my mind is Sister Act 2, obviously, because I think, I will also say this about movies that made us gay. I think it had a lot to do with what the cable, various cable networks were running from between 3 and 6 p.m., like, between the years of, like, 1996 and, like, 2004, and Sister Act 2 was on TV a lot. And so we saw it. So was Made in Manhattan, another one of my favorite films that absolutely, you know, cemented my homosexuality and my love of hotels.
For me, it was also The Wedding Planner, speaking of.
You know what's funny? I think Made in Manhattan is like 10 or 20 times as good of a film as The Wedding Planner.
Well, then I need to rewatch Made in Manhattan because I maybe saw it once and
The Wedding Planner is fine. It's kind of a hokey, you know, oh, she's so uptight and he's so freewheeling, like whatever. But it doesn't really take place in the real world. It's in San Francisco, vaguely. They, like, go to a vineyard at one point. It's kind of all over the place. Made in Manhattan is a vital, visceral, seething portrayal of this underbelly of the underclass, of, like, all of these maids who are friends with each other. And, you know, it's kind of an upstairs-downstairs kind of story. And, you know, and it's very J-Lo. She is living in the Bronx, like, taking the train into Manhattan. She's very on the Six vibes. And, you know, there's a real set. There's something very tangible there, right? You know, there is this world, and Manhattan is this place where people of all walks of life, like, clash, you know, and overlap. And there's so much tension and excitement there. And it's mined very well for comedy. Natasha Richardson is brilliant, rest in peace, in that movie. But I think, like, you can really hold on to something in that film. And the New York in there is so specific and so lived in and so real.
And the title of the film has wordplay. And if that's not queer, honey.
Honey, if a pun isn't queer, it's not a pun.
Bitch. Wow. Very good. Very good pitch. And I will be rewatching if unless I just never saw it and I just pretended I had because I saw the cover so many times, which is clearly something I've been afflicted with a lot of these films. I'm like, I have. And then I watch it. I'm like, never once in my life.
Mandela effect. You think you've seen Man in Manhattan.
Truly. It's like, well, it's like, you know, gay people, we feel like we probably like I had already seen Death Becomes Her. But then when I actually watched it during the pandemic, I was like, I have never seen this. And that is partly why this gay ass podcast is even here, because I made a video about it, about how being a gay ass movie, blah, 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 blah. And here we are. But speaking of Steven, I sadly have to end this episode. But can you tell us before we go, where can people follow you? What's the plug?
Wow. Well, social media is one of those things that allows me to connect with my fans all over the world. So I'd encourage you to open that portal and check me out on Instagram and Twitter. My Twitter handle is Gossip Babies. I'm sure you've seen probably a tweet that I made that became a viral meme on one of the many meme accounts you follow. I am viral in all 192 countries that are a party to the UN. And my Instagram handle is Buddha_PH. And there's not so many bold pics on there, but maybe I'll try to put some more bold pics out there because clearly they're effective.
They are. They really had a lasting impact on me. And thank you for that.
Sure.
It's been a pleasure. It's been a joy. And I hope to be able to report back telling you how much I loved Made in Manhattan.
Oh, I can't wait for you to watch it. Yeah, settle in with your husband. Bam.
Thanks for listening to That's a Gay Ass Podcast. Just a little reminder that the ticket link for the LA show on April 27th is coming up soon, and there's more excitement in the works for my friends on the East Coast. I love you so much, and I'll see you next week.
Life is a workout, and Smoothie King is here to help you power through. Whether you're crushing morning miles or sprinting through back-to-back meetings, give your body the energy, protein, and power it needs to help you conquer your goals. Only at Smoothie King.